Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Aaron Drake, 19 years of combination experience, a captain on Engine 35 A-Shift with the Town of Apex Fire Department. Aaron was also selected to speak at this past SAFER conference in North Carolina, where he presented a class on prioritizing the search. Aaron wasn't thinking about the fire service when he was growing up. He had a friend who he met in his band class that told him he was going to join the local volunteer fire department. Once Aaron got on, that began the start of his journey into the fire service, as he fell in love with it and couldn't imagine doing anything else. One of the things that stuck out to me was how Aaron mentioned he would always do what was asked of him, but as he gained years of experience and maturity, he realized he actually didn't know as much as he thought he did. Aaron has a huge passion for search, and when you hear why, you'll understand. With that, I present Aaron Drake.
My name's Aaron Drake, captain on Engine Company 35. I've been a captain in Apex now for just about a year. I've been in Apex since November 2018. So I got hired there. I used to work for the city of Greenville, North Carolina. So worked over there from 2010 to 2018. Got a lot of experience over there. Worked with some really good guys and girls. Had some good mentors over there that kind of pushed me down the path of leadership and the informal leader kind of thing. Got into like working out pretty good over there. I'm still working on that, but it's a daily struggle. But yeah, got into that stuff over there and really got into helping with teach in the academies and stuff because I had some good instructors over there. So I, like I said, been in the fire service for almost 19 years now, combination. And just, man, I'm more in love with it now than I think I ever have been. So I don't know. I love teaching. That's one of my favorite things. I know they always say running joke is those that can't do teach, but I feel that I'm all right at my job. I'm trying to get better every day, but my crew and I are a pretty strong crew. I got a good engineer, good fireman in the back. We go out and do drills and stuff like that. And those guys kill it. Like they're into the job as well. They love it. And they make me look good. I don't have to do a whole lot and haven't had to do any paperwork on them yet. So that makes my job a lot easier.
Absolutely.
And, when you got good guys in the back and good guys driving for you that, know the job well, and they've both been in the job for a little while too.
Okay.
But I don't know, man. It's hard to describe my like.
Yeah. I get it.
I was lucky enough this year. I presented a class at SAFER, the South Atlantic Fire Rescue Expo, and dude, that was a surreal experience. Like I've been to that conference. I've been going to that conference. I play in the pipes and drums. For the Brotherhood band since like 2013, I think 2013, 2014. I think 2013 was my first year. We did the Brotherhood bash behind Napper Tandy's and man, it was like, I was hooked. And, so I play the snare drum and pipes and drums. And I've been going every year, but to go this year as a presenter, as an instructor was totally different experience. And, I still played with the pipes and drums, but, it was super cool to like have something that I guess that I put together, accepted on that stage, largest fire rescue conference on the East Coast. And, my name was up there on the board right behind Tim Anderson's name, who's a pretty big name in the fire service on the East Coast. So, it was pretty neat. I taught in the same classroom he did just about an hour or two later.
Okay.
So, but yeah. Okay. So,
growing up, was the fire service always something you wanted to do, or was that just something that developed over time?
No. So how I got in the fire service, you want me to start on that?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
So, I graduated high school in 2006. I was living just outside of Goldsboro in a little community called Rosewood. And I met a guy in school who is now to this day, my best friend. His name's Alex Reichert. He's a captain with the city of Goldsboro. But I met him in band class. We had jazz band together. We both played music and started hanging out. I started giving him rides home from school because I had a car. And then when he turned, or he was 16 at the time, but shortly after he turned 16, he's like, man, I'm going to go join the volunteer fire department. And I was like, okay, I'll go with you. You know, like we'll go together. We'll do it together. I learned later in life that my grandfather was actually a volunteer fireman for a brief time. He got tired of getting woken up in the middle of the night for fire calls, so he got out. But I didn't learn that till, like I said, a while later. But anyway, so I'm nobody in my family that I know of outside of him has ever been in the fire service. And yes, we went down and joined the volunteer fire department. Man, like, you know, they said you get bit by the bug. And I back in 06, 07, that was back in like January 07, rules were a little more, you know, John Wayne-ish, I guess. So like I learned how to put on an air pack on at a Monday night meeting, and I was inside fighting a structure fire on Thursday. And I had no clue what I was doing. Left my gloves on the truck, actually. Like I got fully dressed, like hood up, helmet on, and I asked the engineer on the truck. I was like, "Hey man, what do I need to do?" He's like, "Well, get in there and help him." And so I ran inside to go help him, put my mask on, and didn't have my gloves on. I didn't realize that till I got to the fire room, and I was like, "Man, my hands are hot." But like I didn't, luckily didn't get burned. It wasn't that much of a rager, but yeah, it's a little bit of a like off literally thrown to the fire introduction there, and fell in love with it. Got hired in the city of Greenville. They were gracious enough to hire me, and 2010. There's 12 of us that got hired out of like 500 plus applicants. And man, I don't know how I snuck through, but I'm so glad I did. But learned a lot in that academy. And yeah, just kept growing and growing and growing. And man, I would like looking back at it now, like I was one of those recruits that probably a lot of the instructors didn't care for, because I did just enough to get the job done. You know what I mean? When I was in recruit school, like I would do what was asked of me, but that was about it. And now as a instructor in some academies and, you know, teaching classes and stuff, like I probably would have done the same thing that got done to me. You know, and I wasn't the only one, but we had some choice words thrown at us, you know, picking up the pace and stuff like that. Now I understand why. At the time, I didn't really understand why. And now I understand why there's a sense of urgency and why we need to move with a purpose and things like that. And so I learned a lot from those guys. And then, yeah, I got a lot of experience there in the city of Greenville. I know they catch a lot of flack because they do fire and EMS. And they got one of those, well, we used to call it the Framulance, so the fire truck ambulance thing. And so a lot of people talk a lot of crap about that. But there's some of the best firemen in the state working in that city, and they're just doing the best they can with what they got. And man, they run a lot of fires, we've ran a lot of shootings, a lot of stabbings, stuff like that. So I gained a lot of knowledge and experience from those guys and girls, and wouldn't trade that for anything. I left there in November. Yeah, October 31st, actually, Halloween is a pretty big deal in Greenville. They don't even allow you to take vacation on Halloween. That's how busy it is. Like everybody's on duty. They call a bunch of people back in and everything. But that was my last shift, and finished there in October 31st, 2018, and November 4th or 5th, excuse me, November 5th, 2018, started with the town of Apex as a new recruit, going back through 1 month onboarding. And they hired a couple of us there that had some previous experience, so we kind of got an accelerated onboarding little academy. And got put on ladder truck was the first assignment I had. It was a quint, so we ran, you know, engine and ladder calls. And then in May of 2019, we put our rescue company, our heavy rescue, in service full time. It was jump trucked between the ladder and the rescue. And 2019, we put it in service full time, and I applied for it, had to go through like a tryout process, like kind of prove your skills kind of thing. And then got assigned to the rescue company as a firefighter. Rode on that for, it was 2019, for a year and a half or so, a year and 5 months, something like that. And then got promoted to engineer. Moved to an engine company for 6 months and realized that, man, I want to be back on the rescue. And so luckily a spot came open on the rescue to drive. I bid for it, put in for it, and then got moved to be an engineer on the rescue, and was on that truck until October of last year, when I got promoted to captain. And now I'm back on an engine. And yeah, so looking to go back to the rescue at some point, but the three captains that are on there are the guys that need to be on there right now. So just waiting my turn for those guys to promote or retire, whatever comes first. So it'll be a while, but I'm low man on a totem pole, so wait my turn. But
Okay.
looking forward to it one day. I got plenty of time left, man. I got like, I don't know, 18 years left before I can retire. I know when I moved from Greenville to Apex, I didn't lose any time, but had do an additional 3 years so that way I'd get my retirement, get my health insurance when I retire with the town. So you gotta
Gotcha.
do 25 years with the town of Apex to get 100% health insurance coverage until you're 65. So I'll
Okay.
be 55 at that point. So I'm gonna try to stick it out till then.
Okay. All right. And I'm assuming the move from Greenville to Apex, it was on your own accord, but was it difficult for you to, even though it was an accelerator program, was it difficult for you to know, like, hey man, like, dang, I'm starting all over again?
Yeah, it was like, I don't know if difficult is the right word. It was strange
Okay.
because, I had been promoted a couple of times in Greenville, so, and I've been there almost 9 years. So I wasn't really like a senior man, but like, we have a lot of, or, they have a lot of turnover over there. So we did have a lot of newer guys. So I was a more senior guy on my shift. And, I was a relief officer and a driver operator and stuff like that, and a paramedic. So, I kind of took that senior man role a little bit. And then, so to come back to being the new guy again, I knew, I guess, what was expected of me as far as like, be the first one, last one in line at dinner, first one up from the table, picking people's plates up off the table, answering the phone, taking the trash out, mopping the floor up before everybody else, making coffee, that kind of stuff. And so I tried to embrace that role because I didn't want to come in and I didn't want to be that guy that I came in. I'm like, oh, I've been in the fire service for blah, blah, blah years or whatever. Want to kind of come in, learn my role and work my way up to, being, I wanted to earn that respect of like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing, knows what he's talking about instead of just saying it because I feel that actions obviously speak louder than words. I know we hear that a lot in the fire service, but, yeah, so it was strange to have to kind of go back to that, but I had a good crew. I had a crew when I first got assigned that we kind of got switched around after like a month or so, which they had already planned on doing a shift shakeup before I got there. So I just kind of fell into that, and then the crew that I ended up getting put with, man, I don't have a lot of complaints about them. I learned a lot from them. We did a lot of training. Yeah, I still had to do a probie pack, so that was kind of a it was some of it was a little rudimentary of like, and then some of it was like, okay, it's good to get my hands on this stuff again. I was already an instructor. I was teaching firefighter 1 and 2 classes at this point. So when we're out there and I'm having to show them that I know how to tie a bowline and stuff like that, it's like, okay, they need to see me do this. But at the same time, I'm like, here's a bowline. It's very, I don't know, it was hard to step back into that student role of being that, recruit, I guess you could say.
Right.
But yeah, no, it was good, man. It was good to, like I said, to kind of get humbled a little bit of, man, maybe you're not as good as you think you are, kind of thing.
Right.
You
Right.
need that every now and then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Which you mentioned earlier, and it kind of like stuck out to me, and I kind of felt like I can relate. You mentioned earlier how you were a firefighter and you always did what was expected of you. But then at some point, something tripped inside you. And I always kind of like to say like a breaker tripped where you
Yeah.
realized I can be a lot better and I'm not as good as you weren't as good as you think you were. And it
Yeah.
took something to for you to see that. If I can ask, what was that? Because the only reason why I ask is, here recently, I've had some people kind of reach out, people that I've worked with. I'm not going to say they know me, but I've worked around them. And so, like with what I'm doing right now with this podcast and this platform, something happened to me where it's all this thing I'm doing, it's always been inside, but it took me going to my first conference to hear these lectures that sparked it for me to go, this is what I'm going to do. So, what happened to you?
Man, I probably attribute it to the crew I got assigned with. I got moved Downtown in Greenville, which is like we call it the big house. It's an engine at that time, it was an engine ladder rescue, two ambulances, the battalion chief, and a paramedic supervisor, and our admins there during the week. So, I mean, it's a lot of people, and I just had a good crew that was motivated to learn and to train. And that was kind of like the initial, I guess, catalyst of like, you know, we're not just here to go to these EMS calls and take Mrs. Smith to the hospital and okay, there's a house fire, let's go put the fire out. Like there's more to just putting the fire out on the fire ground. I don't know, like that's what I think would be the original catalyst of that. And then a little while later I got assigned, and I'm not gonna mention his name. I don't know if he wants me to, but if he listens to this, he'll know who I'm talking about. But I got assigned with an officer that was not the status quo. Like he wants to be the very best at everything he does. He wants his crew to be the very best at everything that they do. And he didn't really accept mediocrity as the norm, you know. He was one of the ones that like minimum standards are only slightly above inadequate. We're not going to be minimum standards kind of firefighters. And so he's the one that kind of got me into working out. Like he was real big into CrossFit and stuff. And I kind of still do some CrossFit stuff now, but I do like, I try to mix it up a little bit. But like, he kind of got me into the working out every day on shift of, hey, if we go out and train for 3 hours and pull lines and throw ladders and stuff like that's, you're sweating, but that's not the workout, that's training. We still go back to the house and we're going to work out later, you know, because those are, you know, some people will be like, oh, we threw ladders for 3 hours this morning. You know, I'm beat, whatever. Well, that was training. Now we got to go work out. And he often would say, if you think that, or if you're one of the ones that say, well, I don't want to work out on shift because I don't want to tire myself out just in case a fire comes in, you need to go work out. That's why you need to work out, is because if a workout that you do exhausts you so much that you can't perform your job duties later, then you need to go work out. He kind of got me into that, and he handed me the book Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink, Leif Babin, and he's like, man, I think you need to read this. He's like, I see a lot of things in you that I think, you know, you're becoming one of those informal leaders on our truck and on our crew, and I think, you know, I think this book would help you out. And when I read that book, I don't want to say it changed my life. That's a little dramatic, but it changed a lot of the ways that I think about things and a lot of ways I do about go about my daily life. You know, taking extreme ownership over own everything in your world. You know, no one else is responsible for what happens in your world but you. And you know, the way Jocko always looks at stuff is like, oh, you know, such and such happened and it ruined your day. Good, go make tomorrow better. You know, that kind of stuff. So that was a big thing. And I don't want to say he's the reason I got promoted to captain, because there's a lot of reasons, but I was in a Fire Officer II class and I had applied for this captain's position in Apex, and I went and had lunch with him one day because my class was in Greenville. So I'd driven back to go take that. Went and had lunch with him, and I told him, I was like, yeah, man, like I'm going through this captain's process. I said, it's the new process. We're changing up. They're doing live fire. We did live fire scenarios instead of like in front of a computer, which was awesome. And so I was like, yeah, it's going to be a lot different. So I think I can use this process. Like I didn't really want to get promoted per se because I enjoyed what I was doing. Had a great crew on the rescue. I love driving that truck. And so I was like, man, I don't know if I really want to get promoted right now, but I want to use this process as a measuring stick. What am I good at? What am I not good at? What do I need to work on and improve on to be a better leader, a better relief officer, moving forward? And then one day, you know, can promote. And pardon my language, but he looked at me and he said, dude, that's bullshit. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, if you're not going into the process trying to be number one, why even waste your time and your effort? And so at that moment, I was just kind of, and we're sitting in Panda Express in Greenville, and I'm just like, all right, you know, that, all right, go. And so after that, and I'd been studying for the written test and stuff before that, but it that just kind of flipped a gear in my brain that I was just like, if you're not going at it 100%, why waste your effort of going at it at all? And so I did everything I could, man. They asked me my Chiefs interview, you know, what was one of the things that set me apart from the other candidates? And my first answer, I said, my preparation. I said, I don't know how everyone else prepared, but I know how I prepared, and I've been preparing for this for at least a year. And so that was something I was pretty proud of, was that when I actually did get promoted, I was like, man, it actually, the hours and hours and hours of studying and watching YouTube videos and listening to podcasts and, you know, all that stuff and reading different books, not just reading the books that they assigned to us, but like other leadership books. You know, Simon Sinek has a good series, The Leaders Eat Last, Start With Why. Those are some good books. And then pretty much Jocko's entire library, leadership strategies and tactics and all that stuff. You know, so that was kind of the long version of how I got to where I'm at now, man. And like you said, that break or flip. Yeah, I don't know of a specific moment that happened, but it was just like a culmination of having good crews and, you know, working with good firemen and running some good calls, some good structured fire calls that like really kind of you know, beat your head in the dirt a little bit, and you go back to the station, you're all sitting there drinking coffee afterwards, going like, wow, that was a good one, you know.
And would you say having that captain that you had, that you met with for lunch, and having all those other individuals around you that wanted to make you better, how important can you say mentorship is? Even if those individuals know that they're a mentor to you, whether you tell them or not, but how important is having those people you can kind of look up to and strive to be like?
Man, I think it's super important to have at least one, if not multiple mentors, in the fire service, especially stuff like that. Because like you think, you know, I feel like, and maybe this is just me, but I feel like I know what's best for me kind of thing and what I want to do. But then having that outside perspective or that outside voice of him just saying like, man, that's stupid. Why would you do that? Like you're wasting everything you've done up until this point. And everything you're gonna do for the rest of this process, you're just wasting that time if you're not trying to be the best. If you're not trying to be number one on that list, then you're wasting your effort. And so having that outside voice, that kind of was like, okay, yeah, he's right, you know. So yeah, I think it's super important to have that mentorship. And it doesn't even have to be somebody that's older than you or more senior than you. Like I talked about earlier, my buddy Alex, like he's like 2 years younger than I am, and he's a mentor to me because he's still an officer. He's been an officer longer than I have. He got promoted to captain before I did, and so you know, I used to, when we used to be on the same shift, and that was super nice because we could talk literally every single morning on our ride home from work. We had about the same commute, so we would call and like do our what we call our daily debrief kind of thing of like, hey, what'd you do yesterday? What'd you guys do? What do you got planned for tomorrow? You know. And so when I got promoted to captain, I got moved to another shift. And so we don't talk as much as we used to, but man, having him to like throw ideas off of, and we still do, you know, through text message or phone calls every now and then, throw ideas off of each other, or like, hey man, like my guys are doing this, like what do you think about this? And so having that person or people that you can call and rely on, super important. If you don't have that, you got to find one. Anybody that's listening to this, like you got to find somebody that you can look to, not necessarily look up to, but look to have a conversation about what's going on, and whether it be work life or personal life, because man, like everybody's going through different stuff, and balancing that work and personal life is very difficult, especially for younger guys who, you know, they may not have a wife at home, or they may not have any kids at home. They're just dedicating their entire, like every day off, they're working or volunteering somewhere. Like that's all well and good, and you know, gain as much knowledge as you can. But at a certain point, you got to take a break. You got to step back from the fire service every now and then and go on vacation and like look at the world around you. Go touch grass, as they like to say. You know, go be with your mom and dad if you're lucky enough to still have them around, you know. Go see your grandparents and stuff like that. That's one thing that I feel like I failed at miserably my first few years. Was I miss a lot of stuff because I was, man, I gotta work. Oh, I gotta work. Oh, I gotta work. And then it's like, dude, they give you so much vacation time. Like, take vacation. Like, do trade days. If you got a nephew's got a birthday party coming up, get a trade day. Go to your nephew's birthday party. So, having that outside voice, whether they're in the fire service or not, to kind of guide you and tell you those things. I didn't have somebody to tell me those things all the time, and I eventually found somebody. Yeah, I think it's super important and vital to have outside perspectives outside of your own brain, because you always think you know what's best for you and what's going to work best, but until you get some other eyes on it, other ears on it, another brain on it, it's gonna could change the way you do things.
Absolutely. Okay, I love it. In your personal opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So, Matt, I love that you asked this question of everybody. I love listening to all the different definitions that you have compiled. I haven't listened to all your episodes because you have like, I don't know, how many, do you know how many you have now?
Over 300. You're,
Yeah.
I think you'll be like 307 or 8 when
Yeah,
you
that's
drop.
nuts. So, yeah, I haven't listened to all of them, but I love listening to as many of them as I can and hearing those. When I did my session at Safer, I actually brought you up, and this is
Oh.
before you had reached out to me. So this is
Okay.
wild that you did. I said, man, there's this guy that does this podcast, Student of the Game Fire Podcast. His name is Danny B. And I said Danny B in the class because I don't know how to pronounce your last
You're
name,
good.
but
That's why I keep it Danny B. But go ahead. Go ahead.
so I was like, his name's Danny B. You got to look him up on Spotify or wherever. And I was like, he asked every person, what's your term or what's your definition of the term aggressive? And so I asked some people in the class, like, what's their definition? I've got some answers. And then I told them what my definition is. And my definition is intention, intent. I saw a quote one time that said, professionals do everything with intent. And we are professionals, so do everything on the fire ground with intent. And so when I think of the term aggressive, a lot of people try to misconstrue it as just being reckless. Well, there is, you can take it to that point, but if you do your job, whatever that be, whether it's search or fire attack or throwing ladders, cutting a vent hole, whatever, if you do it with intent, you know where you're going to throw that ladder, you know where you're going to cut that vent hole, or you know where you're going to place that nozzle, you know where you're going to target your searches at first. Know the why behind what you're doing. Don't just throw a ladder to the front of the house because that's what we do is throw ladders. Throw it to the sill of the window for egress, or if you're going to make entry through that window for search on Division Two, throw it to the sill of the window, go VES that room, and then finish your search. Complete the search on Division Two. Like, have intent behind everything you do. So not just, I've had people give me crap because I run on the fire ground. And I say I use the term run loosely. I'm in full gear, so I'm at a light jog, but when I do my 360s, I've had people like, man, you sound like you're out of breath when you get to the front door. It's like, yes, because I just ran a lap around his house in full gear. And I'm trying to give you an update on the radio. So I am a little out of breath when I first get to the front door. But that's how I do it every time, because that's my version, or my, I guess, ideology of the fire service is, if that was my family inside that house, or if that was my house, why would I not run? I 100%. If I pulled up to my house on a fire truck and my kid and my wife are potentially inside and I got smoke showing, I'm running. So why would I not do that for your family? That's what I signed up for. That's the oath I swore. So when I think about the term aggressive, I think of doing everything with intention and knowing the why behind what you're doing. When we go in to do a search, are we just doing a walk around on our feet, left hand, right hand search, or are we down in a proper tripod position below the smoke line so we can get some visibility? Are we isolating bedrooms? Are we isolating the fire room if possible? That's what I interpret aggressive fire behavior, aggressive firemen as is like they know why we're shutting those doors, and that's something we talk about in the class, my search class is the UL did some studies on residential search and rescue and stuff, and in all of their burns, their 26 burns they did, the victim in a closed bedroom door, if the either the victim was isolated from the fire or if the fire room was isolated from the rest of the house, the victim would survive in every single one of their experiments. So knowing that now I'm going to train on that. So now every time I search a building, I'm searching every room I search, I'm shutting the door behind me and then I'm searching that room. If I get to the fire room and it's in a room that I can shut the door and isolate, I'm isolating that room because of that I've got tucked away in that Rolodex of knowledge back here, that's why I do those things. I know why I'm doing those things because of that, those experiments. And it may not, that victim may be dead before I ever enter the building, but that's not up to me. It has nothing to do with me. My job is to get in there. We rescue the people we know about and we search for those we don't. That's a city of Stockton, California quote, but
Yes.
that's in their policy.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah.
we rescue those we know about and we search for those we don't. And so having that base knowledge is the intention behind it. That's why I do those things. That's why we should be throwing ladders to every single window we can throw a ladder to. So I don't have to call for a ladder. If I'm on Division Two and I have a victim, I need to come down a ladder. I expect that my ladder company has already thrown a ladder to that window. So long. A little bit of a long definition,
No,
but
you're
man,
good.
like that's something that I'm really, I guess, passionate about is like I don't like to see people being lazy on fire grounds. And I know you can watch all the videos on YouTube and on Facebook and everything, Instagram. And I'm not trying to say that because you don't run, you're not a good fireman. That's completely asinine to think those two things are cohesive. But like that's why I run is or that's why I move with a purpose. I may not run the whole time. I need to save a little bit of energy, but I'm moving with a purpose. I'm moving with intention. I know where I'm going when I get there. I want to know. That's why I really I like pre-arrival assignments of like I know what my okay, we're going to be the third engine in, so I know what my job is. We're going to be the first ladder company in. I know I'm going in all in for search.
You stuck a, I loved your take on aggressiveness and how you also correlated it with search. But then the last part, you struck a nerve with me when you said you love PDAs because I'm a fan of PDAs, but you meet so much resistance with others when you start talking, and they'll tell you, well, I don't like it because of this, because it tells you like you have to do this. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure departments that use PDAs, somewhere in between their SOGs or SOPs, there's something that says this isn't in black and white. There are going to be gray areas. But for me, I like knowing where, what's our order of arrival? Okay, if we're second, if we're third, this is what we're doing. Command doesn't have to get on the radio and tell you. You don't have to announce that you're level one. Like you get off the truck and you already know what your game plan is, unless
Exactly.
otherwise said.
100%. And man, I'm not saying that we do everything correctly in Apex. We run the what we call the CAM systems, carry, Apex, and Morrisville. So we always closest unit dispatch on everything. We get carry units for fires all the time. When we put our sixth engine in service, or excuse me, our fifth engine, but our sixth station in service, we stopped getting so many carry units for Apex fires, but we still go to carrying Morrisville. Still kind of like we all train together. So having we have a CAM fire ground policy. That all three departments, operations chiefs, and we had some battalion chiefs, some captains on the SOG committee, put all that together. And yeah, so all three of those departments, we train on it on a like quarterly basis. We go train it. We're actually doing it this month. When I go back to work on next Tuesday, we're going down to Sanford to do some live fire stuff with Carrie and Morsel. And we train on that stuff on our fire ground operations. And so when we pull up, and we actually, when we implemented this policy, well, it's actually like 2 months before we implemented the policy, we went down to the training center and we ran think it was five drills per shift, or per like group. And they ran it for a month for across every single company, all 82 companies, I think it is, went down there and we found the holes in the policy. What worked well, what didn't work well. One thing we found that didn't work well was our accountability, the way we were doing accountability. So, okay, we need to rewrite our accountability SOG. So they reworked all that stuff. But as far as like our pre-arrival stuff, man, I don't want to say it was flawless because I was only down there during my shift stuff. But when our shift was down there, it worked really well. First in unit, depending on your size up, kind of dictates what everyone else is going to do, or depending on the call information of it, do we have known victims inside, potential victims inside? Because to me, that's only two options there are. We either know there's someone inside, or there may be somebody inside. The everybody is out bullcrap is not, that does not compute in my brain. So those are our two options. Do we know where the fire is? Is there heavy smoke, light smoke, that kind of stuff? And that kind of dictates, okay, we're going in fire attack. We're the first in unit. We're going in fire attack, division two. Okay, second in unit. We're pulling a backup line or a secondary line, and we're gonna, VES the second floor. First in truck companies coming in. We're doing search on division two. We're doing ladders on all four sides. Rescue company gets in there. All right, we're gonna establish RIT or IRIC or whatever you want to call it. Like those kind of things went really smoothly, and we found that through training. So yeah, having those pre-arrival assignments, man, we show up to actual like work and structure fires a lot. The last few that I've been on, the last one I went on actually on the engine, I was kind of annoyed because we showed up like fourth due, and I was like, we don't get to, we didn't get to do a whole lot. I think we threw one ladder and we went in for a secondary search. But yeah, when you if you're not first, second, or third, you're pretty much you're out of the game unless it's like a rip roar and
Right.
we're fighting for our lives kind of thing. But yeah, we so yeah, I think the pre-arrival assignments are they're a game changer. It creates a lot less radio traffic.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so there's a lot less confusion.
Yep.
And the only thing that is, I guess, annoying is when you're coming in and you think you might, like I'm asking my guy in the back because our computer's in the back. So I'm asking my firefighters, like, hey, are we going to be next in or is there another truck going to be? He's like, ah, I think we're going to be next in. So then I start getting a game plan of what we're going to do, like what assignment I'm going to assume when we get there. And if nobody's assumed search, I'm assuming search. That's but usually by that time, if I'm coming in third or fourth due, there's already somebody on search. We typically assign that pretty quickly around here.
Okay.
We do have some more aggressive battalion chiefs that will make some assignments. But for the most part, it's you assume your role when you get there and you announce it over the radio, what you're assuming. So
Okay. You talked a little bit about search, but also I wanted to ask you with that, because you said you wanted to talk about it, search and public expectations.
yeah. So one of the things that there's a question I ask in the in my class whenever I teach it, which I'm taught it a handful of times. I'm going down to your neck of the woods actually next month, 2 weeks from now, or a week and some change from now, to Matthews to do search class for 3 days. We'll be down there Monday or Sunday, Monday, Tuesday with all three shifts, doing a classroom session and then a hands-on portion. But the public expectation for it, I ask it in that class, like pose this challenge to people, and I pose it to your listeners here. Next time you go to the grocery store, you go to get your hair cut, whatever, ask the general public, like, hey, if your house is on fire and you were stuck inside, say you're in your bedroom door shut, what do you expect the fire department to do? What is your expectation of the fire department? And every single person that I have asked, well, you are going to come get me, right? That's their expectation. That's what's been beat into their heads through social media or through years of, watching movies and TV shows or whatever, is that if they're stuck inside or if their kids are stuck inside, that we're going in to get them. So if you and your department do not prioritize search over, say, a secondhand line or writ or some of these other arbitrary, I don't want to say arbitrary, that may be not the right term to use, but like some of these other assignments that maybe should, not that you don't need to assign writ on a
Right,
fire. I'm not
but
trying to
there's an
say that.
order. There's an order.
Right. But when you're talking about your priorities on the fire ground, life safety is number one. We have thousands of hours worth of training, thousands of dollars worth of turnout gear protecting us. And now we have data, real world data. And thank you to Lieutenant Basil Ibrahim. He's putting together the Firefighter Mayday survey, or put it together. But we have Project Mayday. We have data, not drama. And now the Firefighter Mayday survey. We have all these resources of hard data, real world stuff that shows us that, well, yes, this is a dangerous job, but when it comes to us, it's not as dangerous as people may perceive, or as some chiefs may want you to believe. So I'm not saying we don't need to assign writ, but when we list our priorities, life safety of the public who doesn't have turnout gear, who doesn't have training, unprotected airways, they're our priority. Yes, we need to locate the fire. Yes, we need to confine and extinguish the fire. 100% agree. But our priorities need to be life safety, property conservation in that order. And so talk about public expectation. That's their expectation, is that if they're inside, we're coming to get them. So if you and your department aren't making every effort to make that expectation become a reality on every fire scene you go on, then you're already failing their, you're failing your oath. You're failing what they have set for you. I hate to use the term, or you hear people, oh, well, I pay your salary, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we are funded by taxes, most of us, if not all of us. And so we have an obligation to them to, provide our services. And that's part of our service is search and rescue.
Right.
And so I joke about it all the time. I make the joke in the class too, but I've never seen a hose line wash a victim out of a structure fire before. So we got to put people inside to pull them out. I use that like as a little joke, but it's the truth. Like I'm not saying we don't need to put hose lines on the ground by no means. I mean, I'm on an engine company. That's our primary job function. But when I'm on that hose line as the captain, I'm searching off that line. I'm searching the heel of the fire. I'm searching rooms that not, I'm not like dipping into rooms to go search them as we're going by, but I'm shutting doors if I can, until we find the fire. We did some training last month, and I was one of the last companies to go through it. And our training coordinator, he's like, man, you're one of the, I think the only captain that searched this room, searched the fire room on this drill. And like every company, and I was like, dude, that breaks my heart. Like that's sad. I'm not saying that to say that, oh, well, I was better than anybody else. I'm saying that because like that almost pisses me off that like, what are you doing? We're in a controlled environment. This is training. This is the moment that you should be searching these rooms as well as like, because that's how you're going to perform on the fire ground. So if you're not doing it in training, you're not going to do it on the fire ground, which is even more sad. Because that tells me that you're just relying on your search crew, which I'm not saying we don't have some good dudes out here searching, but like if you're the captain on that engine or riding the seat on that engine and your nozzleman's putting water on the fire, you go, hey, we got water on the fire. Well, yeah, I'm looking for extension. I'm looking for conditions to change and stuff like that. But why can't I search this room that I'm in right now? It takes me 15, 20 seconds. It's a 12 by 12 room, so. Yeah, that's what I feel like they expect of us. That's what our the public expectation is that we're coming to get them. And if we're not putting all of our efforts into living up to those expectations, then we're failing them. They don't, I would dare say, and I'm not saying these things aren't important, but I would dare say that the general public doesn't really care about probably 80% of the stuff we do on a day-to-day basis, maybe more than that. But if their house is on fire, that's when they're gonna care. And we have to go into every day. Then you hear the brothers in battle of expect fire, expect victims. And if you're not going into every shift expecting that you're going to run a structure fire that's got victims inside of it, then you're not preparing for that. I promise you, you're not prepared. I was reading the book of Search a couple weeks ago, or it was about a month ago now, and there's a quote in there that it says something. I wish I had the quote in front of me, but it's talks about, like, if you knew for a fact that today you were going to run a structure fire with victims trapped, how would that change how you operate on that day? That's how we should be operating. And I was like, oh my God, like that was like a, you talk about the breaker flip or light bulb moment. It's just like, dude, that's deep. Because that's what we're there for. Yeah, we're there for 24 hours, and some of us 48 hours if you work at 4896. And I get those are long days, a long time away from your family and stuff. And we all get tired. We all need breaks. I'm not saying you don't need to take a break or sit in a recliner for a few hours or whatever, but if you're not devoting a majority of your time at the fire department or at the fire station to making yourself, preparing yourself for that, I mean, I don't know how many structure fires, I'll run in my career, but the one day that I run one that I got to pull a victim out of, I am not going to be the weak link if I can help it. That's my goal. That's why I work out the way I do. That's why I train my guys the way that we train, the way that I believe in search and making it a priority. I mean, that's why I do that, is because I don't want to be that weak link for that one time, because I may only ever run one structure fire for the rest of my career. I highly doubt that, but that's totally possible with the way today's building instructions go. But on that fire, I'm not going to be the weak link if I have a say so in it. So.
No, it's funny you mentioned that, because this morning, I'm pretty sure it was a search culture. Justin McWilliams posted a thing like, these are the departments around the country that have adopted the search mindset. And the shocking thing was, as many fire departments that are out there weren't very many on the list. And I was just like,
So that list is those departments have adopted the firefighter rescue survey into their policy. So if they get a grab, it is in their policy that they fill out the survey. And that survey is very comprehensive. There's a lot of stuff in there that questions I wouldn't even think to ask that they ask in there. So those guys, Nick Ledeen, Brian Brush, Justin McWilliams, like Grant Schwalbe, like all those guys that do search at FDIC and stuff like that, those guys have they really got that stuff dialed in. They've helped me out a lot. I don't know if they realize that, but like when I started, like not to kind of change directions or whatever, when I started doing my search class was from I taught search and rescue in our academy, and while I was teaching, I was just like, man, there's a lot of stuff in this book that's not really accurate. Like why, how we're doing search size ups on certain houses of, oh, looking for survivable space. That's a whole nother conversation. Sorry. So anyways, stuff like that. It's in our textbooks, and it's being taught to these guys in the recruit school. And it's like, so why do we teach them one way, and then when they get on shift, we're like, well, this is the real world. This is
This is
what
the
we're
real
really.
world.
Yeah,
Yes,
this is how we
sir.
really do it. And so I was like, dude, this is dumb. There needs to be some way that we can use real world data, the firefighter rescue survey, the Project Mayday, the Data Not Drama, all that information that we have out there, the UL studies, NIST studies, and bring all that information into one place that we can send it out to the world. And that's how you should be training, or that's how you can train, not necessarily should be, but that we need to be training the way that it's actually going down in the world. All these fancy lifts, drags, and carries that we're having to teach of a seat, a chair carry, and all this stuff. Like, we're not doing that in structure fires. Statistically speaking, dirty drags. We're pulling people out dirty drags.
That's right.
Teaching people that, oh, this is how you need to, go through the front door and you start a left-hand search here. Well, split search is statistically the most likely way that you're going to find victims according to the survey, and where are you going to find them? In bedrooms, typically 45% of the time. So why are we not targeting our bedrooms sooner, in our training and then on our fire grounds and stuff? So that was kind of where all that came from. So I put all that information together into a class or a PowerPoint or whatever. And yeah, like just had like teaching these people to do these things the way that it's actually being done in the real world, like by people who are actually making rescues. So the survey, those guys, like I said, Grant, when I first started, I reached out to Grant and was like, hey, you know, is there any information you can help me with or anything you can provide? He sent me Estero County fire, their firefighter manual. Then he sent me Clackamas Fire, which is where Justin McWilliams is, sent me their search and rescue, or they call it rescue and search manual, sent me that. And so I've actually got a Google Drive set up, which I can send you a link to. I got a QR code for the link to that. That's got those manuals in it. It's got my PowerPoint for my class, and it's got the book of search on there. It's got a bunch of different stuff that I feel is pertinent to search. And so I can send you that afterwards. But yeah, like all that stuff is, yeah, I don't know. It's that's where I see the fire services, you know, going, is to being the more real world stuff. And then, like I said, going to conferences and outside classes and stuff like that, you see these guys, you meet other guys that they want the same thing. And so that's why I try to share that thing as much as I can, because it's not my stuff. None of this information is mine. It's stuff that's been given to me or that I've learned from different classes and stuff like that. And I just kind of put it all in one spot. And so
And that's the thing, like the way you were as a firefighter before you knew about these conferences and these lectures is the same way I was. Like, I only knew what I knew through my organization. Once I got to a point where I just felt like, I don't want to say complacent, but I started to, you kind of get that notion, like, you know it all because all your experiences have only been with the organization you're a part of. But once you get outside of those walls, and I started seeing, like you said, the stuff that I was taught because of the textbooks, that's not how it's going to be really done. I knew nothing about dirty drags. And then when I took a class on search and I listened to the instructors explain, they show videos, and I'm like, I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to do this. Like, the only way you get that experience is getting outside of your department. I'm not saying your department isn't great, but there are better ways that you can do things.
Yes, 100%. And I like that. That's almost exactly how I was. Like what you're saying is, you know, very had not really had the blinders on, but was very naive, I guess, to the fire service as a whole. I knew Eastern North Carolina Fire Service, because that's where every class I'd ever taken. And I don't want to discredit any of my instructors that I had in my academy, because they were teaching what they knew to
What they
teach.
knew exactly.
They were teaching the best methods they knew. But in 2009, 2010, when I was going through like fire academy and stuff, like I don't want to say the fire service has changed, but there's a lot of stuff that has changed, and there's a whole like I'm so much more information out there now, and like I said, hard data. And I'm not like a huge like numbers nerd or anything, or I don't try to be, like, but I feel that there is some validity in that, of looking at the numbers and not just going off of, you know, like the little tagline is, I always say, like, tactics driven by facts, not feelings. That's a little tagline on my class, is name of the class is prioritize the search, and then tactics driven by facts, not feelings. Because we get a lot of these, I don't want to call them old heads or old school, like guys that have been in the fire service for longer than I've been alive, probably, and not trying to discredit their experiences, but their experiences and our experiences are totally different.
100%.
They're fighting fire in a totally different environment, in totally different generations. And now they're, some of these people are operations chiefs and deputy chiefs or fire chiefs, and they're trying to make these operational decisions based on their experience and their knowledge.
Right.
And if they're not going to these conferences and these classes, and learning new technologies and new ways of doing things, then they're doing a discredit to their fire department, honestly. And so that's why, like, I am super appreciative. And I'm not just saying this, I don't know that they'll listen to this or not, but like my fire chief, my operations chief, Our chief of professional standards and one of my training coordinators were in my class at Safer. And to have them in the room for something as, I guess, something like the search class, it meant a lot to me that they took the time out of their day to come sit in and listen to what I had to say on for 2 hours, you know, and then they gave me feedback on it. You know, I sent them an email afterwards. I was like, hey, appreciate you coming. You know, I was like, hey, if you have any advice, like I want to make this better for the next time. Tell me what I can do better. What did I do wrong? Or what, you know, how can I make this better? My training coordinator came and sat down and they had notes and they're like, you know, hey, speak up. You know, we had a hard time when you turn around to read the slides. We had a hard time hearing you, so speak up or get a microphone or something. So, okay, you know. And then my training coordinator had a few tips of like some slides I could rearrange in the PowerPoint to make it more fluid or make it flow better. So I did that, you know. And so just having your administration like support you in that way, it meant a lot to me to know that they're open to those new ideas. So I'm very lucky to have that, but not everybody has that. Some people still have those old school guys up there in the top that are, like I said, doing stuff that with their experience and not, like I said, not trying to discredit that stuff, but fire service has changed and the way we operate, the focus we have put on putting water on the fire and, you know, not just, you know, I don't know if you watch any Ray McCormick's videos or whatever or any of his stuff, but, you know, spray water, like you know, talking about pushing fire, pushing smoke, all that stuff. But like, if you're in a hot environment, guess what's going to cool it down for you and the victim? Water.
Water.
And looking at, I don't know if you've read Jonah Smith's article in Fire Engineering about the hat dance of fire attack and search. Like, you know,
Okay.
what do you do if you're on the nozzle and you come across a victim kind of stuff? And you know, cooling that environment, move past the victim, put yourself between the victim and the fire. And cool that environment down is going to drastically improve conditions in that room. So all that stuff, you know, those are things that probably 15, 20 years ago that, well, you don't spray water until you get to the fire room. You know, that's kind of how I was taught. Like we don't spray smoke. We don't spray. That's talking about penciling the ceiling, you know, to see if you hear the gas exchange, like, come on, dude. Like, what's that? Like, some of that stuff to me at the time made sense because that's what I
Means
was being taught, and that's what
that's
those
right.
guys knew,
That's right.
you know. And so, but now we have all this water mapping stuff coming out of NIST and all these other different agencies that are not necessarily disproving some of that stuff, but it's kind of proving what works and what doesn't. And
Absolutely.
so we're in a
Absolutely.
totally different new generation of the fire service now, and it's going to
Absolutely.
continue to change.
Yeah. No, you're 100% correct. And I want to also add on, like I call the OGs old heads because that's what I learned from. But what I can't stand is you have individuals who go to these classes who come back and want to share this information. And when you do, or when you go, hey, such and such, this is the new data that's being shown. They look at you as a threat, or they look at you as, well, you don't know what you're talking about, or they feel disrespected. And it's like, listen, I'm not, and you said it 100% perfect. That's the way they were taught. But so we just recently had Chief Ashby come to Mooresville, and she explained it perfectly. I might get the years wrong, but she said she learned strategies and tactics back in the 1990s. She's a battalion chief in 2025. What good is her knowledge if all she knows is still facts from the 90s? And it makes sense. Like, get out of your wheelhouse, learn something new, because with experience, the people that have all these years of experience, that's great. But if you do nothing to help further your knowledge, all it is experience. It's old tactics.
Years of service don't equate to years of experience. And too many people forget that. And you're exactly right. If you go through your fire academy and then you go and you might take fire officer one or fire officer two or instructor one, instructor two, whatever. But if you're not using those certifications to progress yourself, you're not out there teaching, you're not out there like that's what I attribute a lot of to of the the way that I am was when I started teaching, it forced me to study more because I didn't want to get up in front of the class and look like an idiot. They ask me a question and I don't know the answer. Oh, well, let me flip through the book. Like I'm not doing that in front of class. I have to do that with some questions, but so that kind of forced me to study more. So if you're not out there going to these conferences, these classes, or and trying to learn new ideas and learn new ways of doing things, what she says exactly right. Like you're going to be using ever learned, and I didn't learn anything else. You're going to be left behind, like leaps and bounds. They're going to be people that are going to be leaps and bounds ahead of you because they're using their experiences and their classes that they're taking from multiple different instructors. That's one thing that one of the guys, he used to be a fireman on the rescue, which he still is, but when I was on the rescue as an engineer, he was one of my firemen. He is probably, I think, probably the most certified individual in our department. He's a firefighter. He's not a senior firefighter, doesn't drive. He's not an engineer. Like, he is a backseat fireman. He, I think, holds every, up until this recent change where they just changed on the certifications, held every North Carolina certification that was offered, with the exception of Fire Officer 3 and structural collapse. Like, anything else the state of North Carolina offers, he's got a piece of paper of it. But he has some of those classes multiple times. And I was like, man, you took this class like 3 times. He's like, well, yeah, I take with different instructors. You learn different stuff. It's like, dude, like, now I feel like a piece of crap because I took Fire Officer 1 like 4 years ago or 5 years ago. And it's like, well, maybe I should go take it again. Now that I am a fire officer, maybe I need to go take it again from a different instructor and can pick up something. And so it's like, dude, like, that's, I don't want to say it's genius, but it's very smart of him to take some of these certification classes. These are 2 week long classes with a written test that this dude's sitting in multiple times because he just has a thirst for knowledge, and so the big thing with that is too, is like using that knowledge, bringing it back. Like you said, you go to these conferences and having the support. We actually have, I don't think it's in policy, but it's kind of the expectation that, like, if the department sends you to SAFER, to FDIC, or to FRI, or some of these other conferences, or we have a pretty robust training budget, thank goodness. And they'll send you to, like, they sent myself and another guy on my shift to the Indiana River Rescue School in South Bend, Indiana. It was a week long of in the East Race up there in South Bend, Indiana. One of the best swiftwater classes I've ever taken in my life. But we're teaching in November the skills and techniques we learned up there. We're teaching them to our swiftwater team in November down in Fayetteville. We're going down there for, I think, 3 or 4 days to teach those skills. And that's the expectation. If we spend money on you to invest in you to send you to these classes, the expectation is that you are going to bring that knowledge back and present it to the department. And I'm super thankful that they allow us that opportunity because, I mean, the class was a blast. I learned so much. And then now to have the opportunity to come back and bring those skills and that knowledge to the rest of the team is pretty big that they support that kind of stuff. So.
That's awesome. Okay. We kind of jumped right into it, but I did forget to ask you earlier. Can you tell us a little bit about Apex? The size, how many stations, your personnel? It doesn't have to be exact, but
Oh,
just
yeah.
things like that.
So we are 110, 115, something like that, personnel full time. We got 6 stations currently, but we're combining our station 1 and station 3 are like they're remnants of the volunteer and career days. Like, they at one point they had 2 stations and they're like 3/4 of a mile away from each other. So we, our rescue company and our battalion chief, or one of our battalion chiefs, we have two, are housed at station 3, and then we have an engine company housed at station 1 downtown. But they are about to combine those 2 stations. They're doing a complete rebuild and remodel of station 3. So we currently have 6 stations. We're about to have 5. We have, yeah, 5 engine companies, 2 ladder trucks. We got a bucket, both rear mount, but we got a bucket and a stick, 2 battalion chiefs, and then a heavy rescue company. And that truck's getting ready to get rebuilt too. About to start building a new one of those. So a lot of big things coming. We got 20, 25 to 30 square miles, I think, is what we cover. We got some like county areas that are probably not included in that, but like the actual town limits, I think around 25, 26 square miles. And then I don't know how much county area we cover. We got quite a bit. So we still have a tanker truck, that gets dispatched every now and then. We got three Swiftwater like Zodiacs. One stays at my station, Station 5, for like in-town stuff. And then we have the two state asset boats. We are a state deployable water rescue resource. And then we have two flat bottom boats with a fire pump and stuff that stay down at Station 2, which is near Harris Lake, and Jordan Lake, that kind of area. So yeah, we're growing, man. I just got an email earlier today where they sent out our two new guys got their shift assignments. I think we've got one vacancy right now. Getting ready to hire six, I think. So we'll probably fill this vacancy off the last list. And then we're getting ready to overhire six. And I don't know where those overhires are going to go currently, but the plan, I think, is to kind of alleviate some holes. We've had a lot of people go out with injuries, and then the town officers pay baby leave, pay parental leave. And so we've had a lot of vacancies and stuff from people just being out. So we're getting ready to do six overhires in January. But yeah, we think we're around 4 or 5,000 calls a year right now. I don't remember what our last year's numbers were, but we're getting busier just like everywhere else is. And trying to get more companies. We've got Station 7. They're buying land for that right now, I think, or maybe have already bought the land for it. I'm not sure where that is. And talking about Station 8 already. So probably get, I don't know if we'll get another ladder company or if they're just going to move a ladder company. I'm not sure. But they're talking about moving a ladder company out to Station 7, which is a rapidly growing area down in like kind of the southwest side of town. But yeah, it's a good town to work for, man. They take care of us. Town, very supportive town council. And like I said, our admin, which I know our chief's going to retire probably in the next few years. I don't know how long he's got left, but he came from the town of Garner. And so he's done a lot of good stuff for us. And we're still doing a lot of good stuff. Got a lot of stuff coming up on the horizon. And so if anybody's looking for a job, we're getting ready. We're hiring again soon.
And what's your minimum staffing on your apparatus?
So we assigned four on everything. But the ladders and the rescue usually don't drop below four unless it's like emergency stuff. Our engines will run with three. And then our two battalion chiefs obviously just one. Yeah, our ladder company in my station rides four like every day. Like they will not, because we have the tanker there, so we have to have at least one person there that can respond the tanker if it's dispatched to something. But our other ladder company, Ladder 34 on the east side of town, they'll drop to three very rarely, and then the rescue comes the same way, very, very rarely. It's been happening a little bit more often lately because, like I said, we had to have so many injuries. We've had people go out with like knee injuries, shoulder injuries, stuff like that. And but they usually try, though, they've been blowing through a lot of overtime, hiring people back to fill those spots and cover those trucks, because the way we operate, man, we split on everything. Like every structure fire, we go to our rescue company, splitting to search. We'll search both divisions simultaneously from the rescue company. The ladder company will split and send two in for search, two for outside vent. So if they drop those trucks below four, it just throws our whole operations off, and we gotta kind of run an audible, so to speak.
When it comes to leadership, what kind of leader, when you decided you wanted to be an officer, what kind of leader did you want to be, and what does leadership look like to you?
So I'll say this. If you wait, and I don't mean this to kind of like contradict what you just said, but if you wait until you decide to be an officer or want to be an officer to start leading, you're already behind the eight ball. You got to start leading from day one. That's something that I firmly believe in. And When you get in the fire service, that's not something that I kind of understood a lot, that like, hey, we need leaders at every level. But now, having been at, the different levels and stuff, and now being an officer, like, I understand how important it is to have my engineer be that leader on the truck when I'm in there doing reports or doing, whatever office BS I got to do that day, or excuse me, office important stuff I have to do that day. But having that leader in the front seat, and then like my backseat fireman's a relief driver, so having him be that leader in the back of being able to step up and say things or offer advice or offer suggestions for stuff, because he bumps up to drive, and he's going to have to step into that role when we get that newer person in the back. So I believe in leadership at every level. One of the Joshua Chase's book, Jump Seat Leadership, is a great book. If you're a fireman riding backwards, I mean, even for if you're an officer, I highly encourage you to read that book as well. Because there's a lot of good stuff in that book. Him and Jared Sergey from Norfolk, they have some good books on no nonsense leadership. That's a good one. But yeah, so it's hard to put it into like kind of condense it down, but leadership at every level is super important. And so when you talk about that leadership, we use that term a lot. Like, what does that mean? I believe it's leading by example, leading through your actions. Like if everybody else is sitting in recliners and it's 1:30, lunchtime's over, like get up, go out in the bay, start cleaning something, start training on something, because I feel like that's gonna, a lot of times people don't want to be called out. So whenever, if you just start doing stuff, people are gonna be like, and now it's almost to a point where it annoys me now as an officer, because people think that they don't want me to do it. We had a guy the other day, was joking around or whatever in the tool room, and threw like a half a scoop of ice at one of our other firemen. Just like firehouse prank, whatever, harmless. Well, now there's ice on the floor, and he walked out, and the ice melted. So I started mopping it up, and then he saw me, and he's like, "Oh man, I didn't mean for you to like." Well, he comes in there trying to take the mop from me, and it's like, no, it's fine. I got it. Like, it's not a big deal. I don't mind. I'm not too good to mop a floor. You know what I mean? Like, and so it's kind of to an annoying level now, to where people don't want me to do some of those things. But it's like, we're no different, dude. Like, those bugles on my collar don't mean jack squat. Like, it is nothing but, what is a pomp and circumstance. You know what I mean? Like, me being a captain, the only time it really matters is evaluation time, because I'm the one doing them. But other than that, all it means is that, like, yes, I am the ultimate decider on, fire grounds, whatever, like making decisions, but I'm taking your input. I'm taking, like, when we're pulling up and my engineer's like, "Hey, I'm gonna park here," or, "I'm gonna pull here," like, he's not asking me, he's telling me, "Okay, sounds good." Like, I'm not making that decision, he is, and that's the expectation I set for him. Like, like we have to be on the same page with this stuff, but I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. Like, your apparatus positioning is, that's on you. Now, if I see something that you don't, and I'm like, "Hey, well, no, maybe we should pull past or stop short because the ladder's coming in this way," or whatever, like, I might throw that stuff out there, but that's on you to make those decisions. And so yeah, leading like that, of letting your guys make some decisions, making the hard ones when you need to make them, but letting your people, don't sit here and handcuff them, and don't tell them how to do stuff. Like, that's one thing that I feel like I struggle with still on a daily basis, is I don't like being micromanaged, so I don't want to be a micromanager of my people. And I have ideas of how I like things done, but that's not the only way to do things. And so, like, practicing that stepping back and just letting them do it and seeing how it goes kind of thing. That's something that I still, like, I have to like make a conscious effort to almost bite my tongue of like, "Hey, just let them do it. If it doesn't work, we'll figure it out." So like, I like reading a lot of, like, my wife makes fun of me, because I, like, about the only books I read are on leadership these days. And so I like she asked me the day I went for a run. She's like, "What'd you listen to? You listen?" I was like, "I was listening to an audiobook." She's like, "Oh, I bet it was something about leadership or whatever." I was like, "Well, actually, yeah." and it's just funny that she says it, but like that's how I learned how to be a good leader is by watching other good leaders, watching some bad ones, learning what I didn't want to be, and then reading those books that kind of give you those outside perspectives or the perspectives from, the Frank Viscuso Step Up and Lead. Like that's another phenomenal book. Like, having those outside perspectives and using other people's experiences and the things that they failed at to know what works and what doesn't. And so yeah, I think like I said, I'm not trying to bounce it back to you, but like the leadership, once you decide to be an officer, like you get that in your brain, like, okay, I'm going to start studying for this officer's exam. Like, it's just like when they announce that promotions are coming up, if that's when you start studying for it, dude, you good luck, then you might get promoted, if you're smart enough and you can read that much. But I knew, like, I'm not a very fast reader, and I knew if I waited until the moment the announcement came out, there's no way I could read all the SOGs, all the town policies, all the entire fire officer book, like all these different things that we had to read and study. It's like if I wait until the announcement comes out, I'm never going to finish reading all that stuff, not to a quality of understanding. And so, yeah, you gotta. Once you make that decision that, hey, I'm going to step up and I'm going to be that leader on my crew. And if you don't have that leader on your crew, for anybody that's listening to this, this is a big thing too. Like, be that leader. Like, if your officer's not stepping up, if you've got a guy that's like, maybe he's close to retirement. And so he's, kind of checked out or whatever. Like, every department has those guys. Like, there's nothing in the policy that says that you can't step up and be that leader. Like, yeah, don't step on his toes and don't try to be the officer. But if you want to go train on something or you want to go like go walk through a building or what, throw that stuff out there. Like, hey, like I was reading this article about, flowing and moving the other day. And I think I want to try some of that. Like I've never done that or whatever the case may be, like and then go out there and practice on it. Cause he might stand there and watch you do it, but that'd be a hard. I feel like that'd be hard for a lot of officers to stand by and watch their guys just go out there and train without
I mean, it
them.
happens, but yes.
And if there's an officer that allows that you'll sit there and just watch your guys train and you're not going to put gear on with them, then that's another problem within itself. So
Absolutely.
there's a lot of times where we'll be pulling hose or something like that, and I may not even be the one to pull the hose, and I'm gonna be in an air pack with them because if you're suffering, I'm suffering.
I love that. I love that. And I also relate that to instructing or teaching. If you're instructing a new set of recruits or new people or whatever the case may be, and they're out in gear, you should also be in gear. It doesn't matter that you've done it before. It doesn't matter that you're teaching it to them. What they're in, you're in. If they're in gear and you're in just pants and t-shirt and it's hot and they're sweaty and you're sweaty, but you're not sweating as much as they are, to me, there's no respect there. I mean, that's my opinion. Some of these old heads might disagree. Well, I've earned that. Okay, well then therein lies the problem in itself. It's because you feel like you have earned that where you don't have to be in the same gear that
You
they're
gotta
in.
earn it every day, man.
That's right.
That's not a like lifetime. Well, I went through, RIT school in 2012 or whatever, so now I don't have to do RIT training anymore. Like, that's not how that works. Like when I do hands-on stuff, a lot of the practicals and stuff, I like for me and whoever's helping me teach that day, we do it first to like show like, hey, this is how it's supposed to be done. And I like the whole crawl, walk, run mentality. So like when we do search classes, we do a lot of stuff in just like bunker pants and gloves and helmet maybe, and then we'll do it in full gear, and then we'll do it on air, maybe cold smoke, if we have access to live fire, which is very rare. I like that process so you can show them how to do it at each step and then allow them to perform it. And and if they don't do it, then we work through that and try to correct those issues and stuff. But I when I teach, I like that, man. I don't know, when I like, usually when I teach, I'm in at least bunker pants, a helmet and gloves. I may not be in a full air pack for every scenario. But I'm also, a lot of times I'm moving around between stations or stuff. So, but now I like that. I might start incorporating that into some of the classes. Like, hey, I'm going to suit up, I'm going to pack up, and I'm going to perform the skill or whatever to show you that, like, okay, yeah, I can tell you about it, but can I do it? Yeah. You
That's
know?
right. That's right. And it's not my thing. I learned that through taking these lectures. I learned it from taking these hot classes, and I noticed, like, oh damn, they're in the same thing, 'cause I'm so used to the instructor's not in that. And it's like, okay, and yeah, you take the class and you do whatever, but to my personal feeling is I respect that person more, because it's like they understand that, yes, I know you guys are hot, you're tired, like, but let's get through this, let's do it together.
Yeah, man. That shared suffering, like, that's why I like, working out together. And then, like, that's one thing that I think we struggle with in Apex a lot is, we have some tight crews, and like, I feel like I'm pretty tight with my guys. We do some stuff off duty together, which I think that brings a lot of brotherhood and camaraderie too. But that shared suffering of suffering during workouts together, and then suffering on calls together. We don't run the number of structure fires like the city of Durham and the city of Raleigh or Charlotte or whatever to have that. And that's something that I kind of miss from my days in Greenville. Was, man, that was some of the best times of my career and of my life, where after we had just gone through a snot slinger fire or whatever, got our heads beat in, and we're back at the fire station sitting on the front ramp, we're all still sweaty and nasty and stuff, because then nobody showered yet, and we're talking about like the fire or whatever. And like, those were, I feel like, brought us so much closer together, that shared suffering. So yeah, even in training, like, I feel like that's important. And so that's why, like I said, a lot of times I'll jump in there and do stuff, or try to do it first, just because I don't feel like I'm, like I said, I don't feel like I'm special. Like, and I hate's a strong word. I strongly dislike those officers that feel like they're special because they got a bugle on their collar or two bugles on their collar. Like I said, I wear a gray t-shirt, the same color as everybody else out there on the training field. Like, we all wear the same color t-shirt. Mine's no different than yours. So I'm not gonna act or be treated any different. I don't want to be anyways.
Wonderful. Okay. All right. fitness and conditioning. To me, that goes hand in hand with the fire service. Like, you can't have one without the other. Like, it's the yin and the yang. So what's your take on that?
So yeah, when I first started getting into working out, like when I joined the fire service, I didn't really work out hardly at all. Like, I worked in a I was a machinist, like CNC machines and stuff. And so I stood on my feet for 8 hours a day. Didn't really have a need to work out. I was never really like overweight, so I didn't like care. And then when I joined the fire service, I was working overtime one day with a guy who was like super buff dude or whatever, like absolutely jacked. He still is to this day. He was like, yeah, come work out with me. And I could barely bench press 135. Like, I don't remember how many times I did it. I might have done it twice. I don't remember. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's kind of embarrassing. You know what I mean? And I was in my mid-20s. I was like 23 years old, 22, maybe 23. And so I kind of started lifting weights a little bit, and then got in, like I said, got into doing CrossFit, because I feel like, and not necessarily CrossFit itself, the brand, but like that style of workout is so beneficial to our job, the strength and conditioning, in short bursts. We have some workouts that are 40, 45 minutes, hour long, whatever. Like, you do the Murph, if you can do the Murph in under 45 minutes, like in a vest, like, that's moving. I know a lot of guys that can, but I can't. I'm at like the 50-minute mark, 52 minutes, I think it was my last year. So it's like, but those type of workouts, short burst in a short interval workouts, high intensity interval workouts, are so similar to our fire ground tasks. We do everything in short bursts. Like, I don't know how long you last on a cylinder, but we wear 45-minute bottles in Apex, and they are not light. They're 45-minute, 4,500 PSI, so they are still pretty bulky. We haven't upgraded to the 5,500 PSI bottles yet. And so being able to make that last as long as possible is something that I try to do. So I think I can, I don't know what my last air consumption test was. I think it was like 15, 16 minutes or something like that. And that like that's I almost say that it's embarrassing that it's that short, but that's just the reality of what it is. But so I don't know. I haven't done one in a couple of months. We might need to go do one. Be a good training topic for next cycle. Yeah, just having that strength and conditioning aspect of it, of we still need to be able to lift weights because we got to be able to pick up heavy things. People, our brothers and sisters, saws, ladders, rip packs are not light these days. All these things are nothing's really getting lighter. EMS bag, I don't know how y'all do this, but our EMS bag is packed and it is heavy. And so being able to like pick these things up and carry them in turnout gear where you're already adrenaline's already pumping, you're and they talk about in the book of search too about like condition red, condition black, condition gray, all these like where your heart rate is in these like if you're pumping at 140 to 160 or something like that, like you're already your cognitive ability is already declining, your fine motor skills are already declining. So conditioning your body to be able to operate for 15, 20, 30 minutes at that heart rate or at that level is gonna pay dividends one day. Is that's my mindset. It's like I mentioned earlier, like I don't want to be that weak link. So I did a really good workout the other day that a buddy of mine sent me that was it's if you do it by yourself, it's row 2,500 meters, and every 500 meters you get off and you do a burden carry. I had a sandbag, brute force sandbag. You do like a 100-meter burden carry, and then I did a like through the bay and back. So like I don't know how long that was, but maybe 100 feet or so of a dummy drag. We got a like Rescue Randy dummy, and did that for 5 rounds. And dude, that absolutely murdered my legs. But I told him, I was like, I'm gonna do a next our next work cycle on an echo bike. Do 2 minutes on the echo bike, and then the same reps in gear on air. And see if I can finish 5 rounds without running out of air. So we'll see how it goes. I'll let you know. But it sounds terrible. I hate the Echo Bike. Gosh, I hate the Echo Bike so much. It works so well, and that's the only reason I do it. But I hate that machine. But yeah, it's one of those things, man. It goes back to public expectation, is they expect us to be able to perform at a high level on every single call. Like, because every single fire we run, every wreck we go to is their worst day. They haven't run three wrecks already today and two EMS calls. They didn't run a structure fire last cycle, and now you're getting another one this cycle, and you got to wash your turnout gear all over again. Like those things, they don't know that. This is in their world, this is the worst day of their life. And if you don't perform up to their expectations every single time, you're like I said, you're failing them already. And so conditioning your body to be able to do this job is something that I took very lightly at first, and I do not take it lightly anymore, because I've been in classes and I've been in trainings where like 2 or 3 evolutions in, I'm gassed. And I'm just like, dude, I don't know that I could do this the rest of the day. Like, what if we go back to the station and we get a structure fire tonight? Like, am I gonna be okay? And so something I try to take very seriously now, not just the conditioning, but the nutrition side of it. Fueling my body with a good breakfast or a decent breakfast. I drink a lot of electrolytes now. I know those have kind of blown up in the world, but not necessarily drinking or taking supplements and stuff to be, Billy Badass over here with these huge muscles, because I don't like obviously I don't have those, but just fueling your body to be ready for what may come. And that's something that like dehydration is one of the biggest like things that I have noticed in me personally has affected my performance on the fire ground. Like I've had those days where I know I haven't drank enough water, haven't had any electrolytes, whatever. Then we get a fire and I'm gassed way too soon and I'm struggling. And obviously you can't let anybody else know you're struggling in the moment or whatever. You don't want to be that guy. But I'm just like, all right, y'all ready to pack up? Let's go, let's roll some hose and get out of here. I've been in the moment where I've been down rolling hose and I started like getting lightheaded and stuff. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I need to get this hose rolled so I can stand up for a second. And I hate that, man. And like I said, I don't want to be that weak link. I don't want to be that guy that that is the reason we don't get the job done, whether that be put the fire out or pull the victim out or whatever. I don't want to be that guy. And so, yes, strength and condition is something that I've tried to take a whole lot more seriously. And like I said, the nutrition side of it too. I still eat
Okay.
ice cream every now and then, man, but you got to earn
Hey,
it.
yeah, exactly.
That's the
That's the
thing.
thing. Yeah, you got to earn it. Like, earn it. I'm with you. I'm with you. Okay. I always like to ask the guests this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
That's a good one. Man, like I said, I really love being on the rescue company. So I'd love to go back to the rescue at some point in my career. I don't know if I'll retire from there. I don't really have a desire to be a battalion chief. We don't run enough fires around here to like to make it like if I was in Charlotte or Raleigh or somewhere like where you're in command of structure fires on a regular basis. I think that would be pretty fun, but my plan is to stay in Apex until I retire. So unless something drastically changes with the town or some of the administration or whatever, I don't see myself leaving. So I'm probably where I'm at, man. We have our next position up, our captain two, is like a relief BC. So I might do that when I'm eligible in a few years. I got like 4 more years before I'm eligible for that. But I'm in no rush, man. I got 18 years left. And I'm just, I like what I'm doing, man. I got a good crew now. That's what I've told those guys. They know that I want to go back to the rescue at some point, but I told them I'm in no rush, man. Like I said, the guys we have on that truck on all 3 shifts, the captains are, that's the, those are the guys that need to be on that truck. Like, no doubt. Like, they all three are super smart guys. But we got one of them that's eligible for promotion. I don't know if he'll go out for it, but he's got, I think, maybe 5 years left till he retires. So if he doesn't promote or chooses not to, then he'll ride out his till his retirement, and I'll hope maybe take his spot in 5 years from now. We'll see.
Okay.
But that's where I'd like to retire from, and I'd love to be the captain on a rescue company. And I just like that work more. I don't know. Not to say engine work's not important at all and not fun. It is fun. But the swift water stuff, the rope rescue stuff, confined space, high angle stuff, that all that kind of stuff, and the extricate vehicle extrication, like that's just fun. A lot more fun to me.
No, I get it. No judgment here. Like I said,
Like I said.
everybody has a role that they need to play. Everybody has an aspect of the fire service that they love. So I get it.
And then my passion for search, the rescue company, the way we operate, our rescue company is considered a truck company on the fire ground, so they'll split and go search. And man, some of the most fun times I've had on the fire ground or coming off that rescue, going in and searching, and just me and one other guy on the second floor. We were usually the division two crew, so we'd go to division two and search bedrooms, and man, like that was always a fun time. And then just getting back to the station, talking about what we did, how we could do it better and stuff like that. I miss that time. But
Okay. All right. Aaron, I appreciate you coming on. You've got a lot of good dudes supporting you in your corner. Obviously, you are doing great things. I mean, like you said earlier, I'm sure you never thought in your wildest dreams you would be elected to go and teach at SAFER, one of North Carolina's biggest conferences. And the amount of support, the people I remember seeing on social media that were talking very highly of you, obviously, you are doing what you're supposed to do for the fire service. And whether you know it or not, you have individuals that look up to you that appreciate what you're doing. So I just want to say thank you for coming on, man, and talking shop, laying down some gospel on some topics, especially regarding search. Yes, sir. Keep doing what you're doing, man. I
Dude,
appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Man, you almost made me cry right there, dude. I appreciate that so much. Like, I'm gonna turn my camera off real quick. No, man, it's not because of me. It's because of so many people, like you said, that I have that are in my corner that have shown me the way. And no, nothing that I, I have my own opinions and my own ideas on things, but man, a lot of the stuff that I know and a lot of the stuff that I preach is stuff that was given to me. And it's the fire service, you know what I mean? Like the brotherhood of meeting people like you and going to these conferences and drinking a beer with like guys from all across the state or all across the country and hearing their stories too and how they do things and learning how you can do things better, man. So like I'm just trying to make the fire service better. I feel like that was what was instilled in me, leave things better than you found them. And so that's my goal. That's what I kind of dedicate my time at the fire station to, is trying to make things better on a day-to-day basis, but then in overall in the fire service. So that's why I like with the search class that I put together, I'll send you the link or the QR code. I'll text it to you because it's not my information, man. It's the fire service's information. And the more people that have that information, the better, because it's only going to make their operations run smoother or run better or whatever. Maybe it'll give them an idea of something they can do different and change the way they do things. So,
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Like I said, I appreciate taking time out of your day to do this.
yeah,
Yeah,
I'm
there's
humbled. I
definitely.
appreciate you contacting me, man. That was when I saw your message, I was like, no way this dude's texting me right now. Like I said, I've been listening to you for a while, man. Like I said, I flip-flop between, I've only have like a 25-minute ride to work, but I flip-flop between listening to you and the Grabs podcast when they release a new one. And then I got some buddies, which they hadn't released one lately, but my buddy Caldero,
Yeah,
yeah,
Trailblazers.
Trailblazer. I listen to them. So yeah, I've been on their podcast a couple of times. Those are some good dudes, man. Him and Jordan, they're doing great things too, dude. So, but yeah, I've been listening to you for a while. So when you messaged me, I was like, dude, this is wild. I was
I'm
like,
no one special,
dude.
trust me, bro,
Oh, dude,
but I appreciate
hey,
that.
same thing you said to me, man. There are people that look up to you and look at what you're doing. And like, man, I screenshot your workouts all the time you post. And I'm like, ah, it's like that looks terrible. I guess I'll go do that, So there are people that look up you too, man. So
I
appreciate you.
appreciate that. Yeah, no, seriously, thank you, and have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
All right.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.